Listening Dog Media.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Hot Mess Mum. The mum most likely to send her kids to school in regular clothes on non-school uniform day. The mum who forgets to sign the permission slip for school trips. The mum who has probably put leftovers in her kids' lunchbox on more than one occasion. But most importantly, the Hot Mess Mum is actually rocking it and is doing a far better job than even she thinks. Please welcome our Hot Mess Mums, telling it as it is, Kelly and Jenny Powell.
It is the Hot Mess Mums Club podcast. I'm Kelly Pegg.
And I'm Jenny Powell. And, just jealous of Cleo's top. It's gorgeous.
She does.
We need a bit of sunshine like that.
Yeah, we do, especially on today.
It's snowing. Our guest today is the wonderful Cleo Wood, women's health and sexual well-being expert. You can find her on And Breathe Wellbeing on social media as well. It's lovely to meet you in person and have you here.
Well, thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm just shining like a beacon in the corner.
What did you talk? You do realise online.
Oh, no, totally. So I buy most things secondhand now.
Right.
And so it's on an online charity shop called Thrift, which is amazing, by the way. But yeah, it looked like a normal, lovely, quite bright red, but you know, just a normal red. And it arrived, and I swear it glowed as I opened the package.
It's neon.
And I'm not kidding. It's like a neon fluorescent orange red. But yeah, I'm leaning into it.
It's great to have you here. It's something that we've wanted to do on the podcast. We've not had. You are our first sort of sexpert, sexual well-being expert on our podcast, season 12 as well. So
yeah, we took our time, didn't we?
I'm surprised, actually, guys.
Yes.
Very pleased to pop your cherries.
Yeah.
Where do we start with this? I guess, really, you know, mums... And how it all changes once you have kids, it might be a good place to sort of start, you know, with that. Because often when we've had babies, I think we lose our sex drive a lot of the time anyway. So it can be a massive issue for women because I don't think it's the first thing on our minds once we've had a baby.
No, I would say not. I think most people do really struggle with that transition to motherhood, to parenthood in general. And your relationship is the first thing to go to kind of fall by the wayside, really. And there are multiple studies that have shown the first years, the first 5 years postnatally are the most hard, are the hardest for your marriage, your relationship, and your sex drive definitely takes a tumble during that time as well. So if that is you, like, you're not alone. Everyone is going through it. It's just that we don't really admit to it and we don't really talk about it.
Mm.
I think that conversation is happening more now. You know, there's a lot more honesty around how hard parenthood and motherhood can be. But yeah, it's nothing to be ashamed of, and it can get better, and it will get better if you want it to. So that's the most important thing, I think, to take away from it.
And the interesting thing is when you're pregnant, your hormones are actually sort of sexual hormones.
They can
sometimes be thriving, can't they? I mean, you can be so randy when you're pregnant.
I
sort of talked about that and said that actually it brought on labour.
Yeah, were you?
Yeah, I was so randy.
Well, and good for you because I really wasn't.
I'm
thinking, when am I going to feel like myself again? My God.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so everyone's really different. Like, there are lots and lots of examples of people really kind of leaning into pregnancy and feeling that glow and the hormones kind of sloshing around in you and making you feel really good. Mm. There are also loads of examples of people who hate being pregnant. I definitely, I don't to be honest, I don't know why I did it second time around, because it was so awful the first time. And then my second pregnancy was actually worse than my first one. Mm-hmm. So I definitely wasn't feeling it, but a lot of people do.
Right.
And then I think postnatally, it's the same. Some people actually can get back in the sack without any problems, you know, really enjoy sex again immediately afterward, not immediately after birth, but, you know, following having a baby. And actually, there are lots of other people who really don't enjoy it. And the stats are really quite remarkable.
Really?
Yeah.
And does that last quite a long time or?
So there's a really interesting study, which says that 83% of people postnatally, women postnatally, suffer some kind of sexual dysfunction or painful sex. So 83% is quite a lot. Mm. That's the stats at 12 weeks, so kind of 3 months postnatally. But if you look at the stats then 6 months afterwards, that figure only falls to something like, I think off the top of my head, it's about 64%. So you're still 6 months in, really struggling to kind of regain confidence in your identity and your kind of sensuality and intimate life. And 6 months in the grand scheme of things isn't that long, I suppose. But 6 months when you're living it, when you're super tired, when you've got a baby that isn't sleeping, and your relationship is kind of on a knife edge, can feel like an eternity. So I think, yeah, it's a massive topic.
Mine was longer than 6 months when I did.
Oh my God.
I swear to God, it wasn't until she was about two and a half, I think. Just the last thing ever. I didn't want anyone near me.
And is it more psychological? Is it more to do with what you're thinking as opposed to what your body is, you know, so able to do?
Yeah, such a good question. I think it can be both. So there are lots of different aspects that can really impact your experience of sex after birth. Lots of physical factors, as well as lots of mental factors. So the physical factors can be things like how your vagina has healed postnatally, whether you've had an episiotomy. So you might have the scar from your episiotomy. Vaginal grazing, even, which we don't really talk about.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, so it's as if you might have little scratches inside your vaginal canal, for example, from when the baby comes out. So if the baby was in like an awkward position and like its elbow was running down your vaginal walls rather than just the head, then you might have some grazing and so on internally as well. Or if you had an intervention like forceps, you might have some kind of impact from the forceps, you know, going in and out of the vagina as well. So there's things like that. If you had a C-section birth, you've obviously got the C-section scar to contend with. And
that was me.
It's major abdominal surgery. You go through 7 layers of tissue to get the baby out, which we don't really think about. You know, C-section births are very common these days. And I had an elective C-section second time.
So me too.
I've done it both ways. And that's a really big thing for your body to go through and to heal from as well. And everyone creates scar tissue differently. So some people's scar tissue might be, you know, might heal really well, might be quite flat, will return to skin colour quite quickly. Or it might be quite lumpy and bumpy, very strong, but it might stay red and sensitive for a long time. I'm in the latter. So actually I'm a year and a half, nearly 2 years postnatally now, and my scar is still very red and raised. So, but there are things that you can do to help your body heal a little bit better, whether that's a C-section scar, an episiotomy scar. Your pelvic floor obviously might have taken a battering. It could be too tight, it could be too loose. Both of those can cause issues.
All this stuff you're talking about, Cleo, is amazing and really informative, especially for first-time moms and stuff. But what annoys me is that, you know, when you're going through this as a woman and pregnant, on with your doctor, with these groups they send you to, go, none of them talk about this, and afterwards there's nothing. I had 2 C-sections, an emergency and a normal and an elected one with my second. Oh my God, they couldn't wait to get me out of hospital. I was there in Manchester. I was there
signing
our patient because I was walking within less than 12 hours and I refused to take anything apart from a bit of paracetamol. Went, you're going home tomorrow. Now, it's great, and I know that the beds are really busy and all of that. I won't get into that. But what annoys me is that there are no support groups or groups for women when they're pregnant to discuss all of this stuff. Mm. All they want to tell you about is how to breastfeed and stuff like that. And there's so much more to this. So it's amazing that we have someone like you. But I think we need this,
you know, there should be groups and all. You've got the NCT, they don't do all of this. There needs to be.
It should be part of the birth curriculum, yes, really. And I totally agree with you. It isn't something that we're taught about. And even when people identify a problem and want to get it solved, most of the time, and from this is from my own experience as well as from talking to lots of other women about it as well, they'll go to the GP and the GP will be like, well, you've had a baby, what do you expect? Which makes me so angry. You know, I cannot describe the rage that it makes me feel, because I'm like, how dare you dismiss me? This might be a woman's problem, in inverted commas. This might be just sex, in inverted commas, but it really makes a difference to your overall well-being and how you feel about yourself, your self-worth, your self-confidence, your marriage, your relationship, is your overall mental health, ultimately.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things where the first time, especially when you have a child, you never think, you just crave to go back to the old normal. You.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When am I going to be that person again? Because that's the lonely place you find yourself in quite often after childbirth, is that I'm never going to be me again. It's just not going to happen ever again. And that's a massive part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And it's a huge part of our recovery, but also a huge part of, you know, the ripple effects for your family. And like you say, your partner is just crucial that, you know, we deal with it
right.
Properly. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank God for people like you.
Well, I just think it's you know, again, you know, we touched on a lot of the kind of physical things there, but we also know that mentally it can be a real blocker for people as well. So if you have birth trauma, you may not think about your body in the same way as you did pre-pregnancy. And that can be a real blocker to actually intimacy as well. You know, actually, even if you haven't had birth trauma, reconciling the idea of your vagina as a thing that pushed a baby out and also a thing that is a kind of sexual object.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Don't go hard in hand, do they?
No, they really don't.
And it's the same with breastfeeding as well. I remember being on a hospital bed when I was pregnant with my son. I was forever going in, getting the band round to make sure his heartbeat was going. I was a lunatic. I think I was the most known patient there, and there was a very old school, I'll call a stern nurse, midwifery nurse on this particular ward, and she came up to me, didn't mind at all how blunt she was, you know, she'd been around for a long time. Are you going to breastfeed? And I remember saying to her, oh no. Now I knew I wasn't, because I tried with Ava, had a terrible time. I wasn't going there with Heath, so it wasn't going to happen for me. I had a lot of trauma from that with Ava, and she started spouting on, saying things like Page 3 and these magazines have ruined it for women, because your breasts aren't sexual. They are functional and they are made for one reason only, and that is to feed kids. And I remember thinking, oh, lady,
you're not a cow.
No, I'm not a cow. And I had no energy. So I just listened to her and thought, I'm not going to mess with her. But I didn't agree with any of that.
Yeah.
And there is that conflict, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, these are part of our, as we grow up, and it is part of our attraction and everything else. We aren't just, and I thought, no, I don't agree with you on that at all.
No, it's incredibly difficult though. There's the whole, you know, sex is the reason that we became parents in the first place, that we became mums in the first place, right?
Yeah.
But it's really hard for those two identities to come together. We are schooled on the idea of, you know, stereotypes of women, images of women. One is like, you're really sexy, the siren, the kind of whore, as it were. And one is the Madonna side, the mother, the pure.
Yeah.
And actually, we are all both of those things.
Yeah.
But we're not taught to think that they can go together.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that
makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. You're both nodding like really hard there.
Yeah.
So that can be a really, really tricky one to navigate when you're a new mom.
Yeah, you kind of have to, it's down to you to kind of make that transition, isn't it?
Yeah.
Say, right, okay, well, you know, that was a part of my life and a part of the time where I had to be like this. But now, you know, I'm recovering well and I head back towards being like this again. But it's an individual thing as well, isn't it? Because some 100%. People like that. Just fine, straight away.
But, yeah.
You know, and then there's other people that, like, takes months, years maybe.
Yeah.
To get back to where they want to be.
I always felt like people around me would say,
We still have sex. It's never been a thing. You know, I had a baby, we have sex. And I would be surrounded by people like that when I had Ava Lily. And I used to think, well, it is just me. And I never talked about it with anyone. Whereas now I don't care.
Yes.
So I'm like, actually, I should say it. Because if anyone's listening who feels crap, they need to know they're not.
Yeah.
It's normal. But at the time, you know, I think, but I don't know whether it's true or whether some of those people felt they had to say that, or who knows? You know, maybe everyone's.
That is one of the things that I always think, though, about people who are telling you
how many times
a week they're having sex. Or,
yeah.
You know, oh, 6 week here, see what the 6 weeks say, and everything's back to normal.
Yeah.
Well, how do you know? Mm-hmm. You know, we are in such a competitive and image-driven world. Everyone's on Instagram. Everyone wants you to know that their life is perfect.
Yeah.
And so if that's what their perceived expectation is, that you are going to get back to normal and get back in the sack, you know, really quickly after birth, then maybe people are just going to say that. But no one's in the room with a clipboard, like, monitoring you. You can easily lie about that, whether intentionally or not. And I think people don't realise, you know, how important honesty is in that phase, because what you say can really impact someone else mentally.
Yes.
As well, like you just said.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it made you feel like shit, but actually it may not have even been true.
No.
So what kind of help could you give, you know, practical terms, you know, for women who are suffering, maybe as Kelly did?
What, in terms of
first of all, to sort of try and get out of that mindset, because it sounds like it's a lot to do with that more than physically.
So I think one of the things that I would say is just to take the pressure off and not feel so much like you need to be doing anything or you should be doing anything. It's totally okay for you not to have sex for a year post-birth if that's what's right for you. What I would say is that you need to talk that through with your other half, if you have one, so that you're both on the same page, so that you both have the same expectations, because it's all very well you saying that, but if you haven't communicated that to your partner, he's going to be sitting there being like...
Because they are affected too.
Absolutely.
This is a female podcast and everything else, but it does affect them as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And, you know, great if you've got someone who's very understanding and loving.
Yeah.
But I know some people who haven't had that, where their partner's been very cross that they can't.
Interesting.
You know, and it's been that they felt they've been demanded on by that person. And I think that in itself is not a nice place to be either, is it?
Absolutely. I just think communication is at the heart of all of this as well. And I know that is not necessarily a very sexy answer, but actually... It's a grown-up answer. I mean, we're all grown-ups, given that we're moms, you know, or you would hope. And, you know, having those conversations and being really open about it with your partner, I think, is really crucial to this as well. And also, there is a lot of stuff you can do that is not penetrative sex that can satisfy both of you as well. Maybe you aren't ready to have penis in vagina sex, and that's totally fine. Why is that the only thing that we think of as proper, in inverted commas, sex?
Yeah.
What happened to a good old snog on the sofa, or like feeling someone up, or, you know, those things can actually be really sexy if you take penetrative sex off the table, you take that pressure away, and you know that you're not kind of going to get anxious and all kind of het up about the fact that it might be coming up and you don't really want to do it. You take that away, that can actually be really, really liberating as well. And, you know, you can still climax with doing all of the other stuff.
You don't
have to be penetrative. And actually, for many women, you know, you don't climax having penetrative sex anyway.
No, well, we know there's a massive orgasm gap, right?
Between, exactly.
And there is, and you know, and there's stats everywhere about that one, which is a whole new other thing.
Yeah.
But,
that's for another episode.
Yeah. Absolutely. And like you're saying, sort of pleasure and intimacy, I know you do sort of like a workshop for that as well, don't you?
Yeah.
But there are other ways, there are other.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if people are struggling to communicate, which many of us are, if particularly if we're tired and, you know, we've got so much other stuff on our plate.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying it needs to be in the moment, in the bedroom, you know, right then, because that can actually be very, very pressured, that environment, if you think you're going to hurt someone's feelings.
Or if you have a night away and you've put that pressure.
Yes, exactly. Or, you know, the expectation of something needing to happen. But doing it after the fact, when, you know, the pressure's off, doing it whilst you're, you know, having a conversation whilst you're going for a walk or in the car, if you're not looking at each other, that can often help as well. Having, I don't know if you have done any conversation card games ever, but they're really fantastic for kind of introducing thought-provoking topics to a conversation in not a cheesy way. Because, you know, we all end up just talking about the laundry or the school run or the grocery shop, whatever it is. And there's so much other stuff that kind of is higher up the priority list than our sexual well-being and our relationship. But actually doing those conversation cards can introduce those topics, and you can then, you then start to kind of naturally be a little bit more open with each other, and then the topic might come up in a less stilted way anyway. So that's a really good one. And also, very practically, lead with a positive feedback. Because, you know, no one likes to be criticised right from the off. But if, you know, you're like, look, I really enjoy this, but could we take that off the table for a little while? Or, you know, actually, you know, that's really lovely and I'd love to kind of do a bit more of that, but could we not do it like this? Is a really nice way of doing it as well. You know, it's a bit like your, what's the word? You know, your HR review, isn't it? You know, you've got to put some positive things in there before the critical side comes out.
What are you laughing at? Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's interesting, right, is right, for someone like me who was married, you know, two kids, then I got divorced. What my husband left when, you know, Pollyanna was still a baby. She was like literally 10, 12 weeks old. I just remember, I know I was sort of flipped things a bit, but I do remember thinking, well, gosh, you know, at least my ex-husband, you know, knew what was going on, but who the hell am I going to meet now? You know, who's going? No one's going to go near there. Especially now, I've mounted popped two kids out, you know, it's thinking on from there for people who are in a similar situation. That's is very interesting. I remember when I met Martin, I thought, I wonder if because Martin's never had children. So when I met my current, keep saying current like he's not permanent. When I met my
the number one life,
you know, he's not. He was younger than me.
Yeah,
he still is as well. Yeah, funnily enough. But you know,
he's younger than me.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, he'd had, you know, he was in his mid 30s, and I don't think he'd even had sex with anyone who'd had children before. Right. Do you know, like younger previous girlfriends never had kids. I thought, gosh, you know. Well, I'm older than him and I've popped out too, and one was quite recently, and gosh, I wonder if he's going to notice.
Did you talk about it?
No. I can tell him I had
no
job until afterwards, because I'd had a conversation with him where he said, oh yeah, I don't do girls with fake boobs, and I was like, oh, I won't say anything. So I was that person who after the event went, well, I don't know how it was for you, and obviously I have had a boob job.
Just dropped you into the conversation.
You met the children. Do you feel a bit closer to them? That's a completely different. I mean, I know I'm seeing the funny side of it, but you know, it's something
daunting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't say a thing until after.
I love that. Very mature approach. But I think that's, you know, it's all very well for me to say, you know, communication, you need to talk about it, blah, blah, blah. But it's different in the moment, isn't it?
So yeah.
I can totally relate to that. You know, we get scared because, you know, we don't want to reveal ourselves and get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I think so much of this, though, is around the kind of self-confidence, self-identity piece.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of what you just said there was about, oh, my God, I'm terrible now. I've had kids, so I'm kind of, you know, my body's different. He's going to think it's terrible. You know, you can be so much stronger and better post-birth than you can pre-birth. We idolize youth as a society.
Yeah.
And that is so dangerous for our perception of ourselves.
But there's a perception
as women, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And there is, well, I don't mean to interrupt you, but there is a perception that, and I think it's fueled through the media, that once you become a mum, you're not sexy. Yeah. And I think we take that on too.
Involved
in that.
Yeah, definitely. You know. Just harking back to the conversation we had just now about, you know, the whole Madonna core complex as well. So I think motherhood can be really sexy. And you as a person are not defined by being a mother as well.
Absolutely.
I think we link the two. When we become mothers, we link ourselves with that identity so strongly that actually it's quite hard to see outside of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm so much stronger now than I was pre-birth, pre my first baby. You know, my pelvic floor is in a much better place than it was previously as well. You know, I know my body much better now. I know what I like.
What
I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really sexy because you know you know yourself, and actually leaning into that, I think, can be a real positive as well. But I get it. It can be completely nerve-wracking. And, you know, what if they don't like me? That's a whole other ballgame. Like, I've been with my husband for, I think, 14, 15 years now. So I haven't been in that situation recently. And it's scary.
Yeah.
The idea of it.
Well, you're back out there dating. Yeah. So you've got all that you're taking on.
Yeah.
If like Jen and like my friend as well, a few of my friends now, they're dating younger men who don't have children, you might feel that pressure because like you say, we're obsessed with youth. So we tell ourselves we're not as young. So that means we're not as sexy or whatever.
Yeah.
So you've got all that pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and then like the worry of taking your clothes off in front of him as well. Like one of my lovely friends who, when I told her you was on, she was like, right, you need to ask this and this.
Sent a list over.
Yeah. And she's just like, I just can't even. She's dating this guy, he's a couple of years younger than her. She's got a child, he hasn't. They're at the lovely stage at the minute where it's just Friday night dates, you know. But she's like, that time's going to come.
Oh, right. So she hasn't had the
They haven't had it yet.
Okay.
And she's like, I am just so bothered. Like, I've got stretch marks. I've got
so
this. So I've got that.
Is it? Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And I think she's an overthinker. Mm-hmm. As I said to her, he's not going to be there with a magnifying glass.
Girls, everyone has stretch marks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
yeah, and she's got stretch marks on his back.
She's overthinking.
Overthinking big stuff. I'm petrified about it. You know, and I said, if that's how you go into it, you're not going to enjoy that time with him. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair on you or him. So we've got to get you in a place where you rip everything off and you don't care. How do we do that with someone like
that? Well, also, the fact is that he's dating you and enjoying it.
Yeah.
And he's still dating you. And you get on.
Yeah.
There's a reason that you're at that first stage anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether you've got stretch marks on your belly or not is not going to change that because, you know, he's not just with you for, you know, whether you have stretch marks or not.
No.
He knows how old you are. He knows you have a kid. And, you know, I think, as always, it's not going to be easy. And I think we can get too into our own heads about this kind of thing. I'm not saying that, you know, that's wrong. It is what it is. But I think we almost need, don't we, like just a little bit more cheerleading for ourselves.
Yes.
We kind of need other people to be like, you know, it is going to be okay. Like, you are wonderful and you need to remember that.
Mm.
And there isn't enough of that. There's so much kind of tearing women down.
Yes.
And, you know, female friendship can be so powerful. We need to lean into that a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, if she will listen to this episode, and I do call her Reese Witherspoon because she does look like Reese Witherspoon.
God, amazing. So what's she worrying about?
Well, she doesn't think she does, but I think she does. So that's her name. That's who she's in my phone as well.
Oh, really?
But if she will listen to this, and I want her to know she is beautiful.
Yeah. And I have to say, after two kids and being older, and also I was older as in, not just an older person, but an older mum.
Yeah.
Meeting a younger guy in my 40s. I had the best sex ever.
Yay. Go
good
Jenny,
let you go. Yeah.
It was like movie sex.
Oh, okay.
Everything I never did in my 20s.
Yeah, because you were loving it tonight.
About this.
No, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I think I just had an epiphany. I thought, yeah, so what? But I'm wiser. you know, I know what I like and I don't like.
Absolutely.
But I started off by liking myself.
Yeah.
Post birth.
Yeah.
And I think you can have it all. You really can. So you tell Reese.
With a spoon.
Yeah. It's not the real one, but yeah, you're meant to. Yeah. You smell her. It is possible.
It is possible.
You can do it. And, you know. Martin, we made up that you've just talked
about. We made up when we're doing it in the rain as well. Never forget it. It was like the New York City skyline. We had this penthouse and we were on the top and it was raining and I could see New York and the, yeah, and it was over there, the Chrysler Building. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah, Pollyanna was fast asleep.
So it's all possible.
It is.
So we're talking about that young, the bit of a younger stage, but how about going into maybe the older for women when our bodies change and we enter the perimenopause and menopausal stage? Because we talk about this a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Because we're very passionate about raising awareness about it and the effect it has on a woman and a woman's life. And obviously that is part of it, the sex drive, how you know, you're going through so much. That's probably the last thing that you want.
Yeah, your libido.
Yes. You know, there are so many similarities between the postnatal phase and the perimenopausal phase.
Okay. I think so.
In terms of, you know, your sleep's out the window.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people can't sleep. I mean, hot flushes, you probably don't get them postnatally, but like those both caused by your hormones ricocheting all over the place.
Your body confidence.
Exactly. Body confidence out the window. Libido goes down. Vaginal dryness is a massive thing in the perimenopause and also postnatally, which we don't talk about either. Yeah. Like as a practical step, you know, lube all the way, but get the right one, guys. Organic or natural only, please, because that can really mess up your vaginal microbiome otherwise.
That's very technical.
In case you didn't know that. I did. So yeah, using the right lube is very important. But yeah, so there's a lot of similarities between the postnatal phase and the perimenopausal phase, and a lot of the solutions can be similar. Obviously, the perimenopause can go on for a different amount of time for everyone. You know, some people might enter it quite early. Some might only, you know, have, say, a year of it before the menopause proper comes. So again, it's all about kind of dealing with what you're going through and not comparing yourself to what everyone else seems to be doing as well. But I think the whole confidence piece that you were talking about, Jenny, is so important here as well, because again, it's another phase of your life. It's a big life stage change that you need to lean into and embrace and feel happy with yourself in that time. And that can be really difficult because your body's changing again.
You're mourning a bit, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Going through that.
Yeah. Like I haven't hit that stage yet, but one of my best friends went through it at 37, so really quite young.
Wow.
And she just, you know, and this was a number of years ago now, but she just said to me, look, there was no one out there being honest and talking about it. And I thought that I didn't know how to handle any of these things because the information wasn't there. I was being brushed off by my GP. You know, she finally did get the help that she needed because she learned how to advocate for herself and she did a lot of her own research. But, you know, it's really tricky, I think, navigating that when you're dismissed so easily.
Yeah.
And people don't think of these problems as something that needs to be solved. They just think of these issues as things that we go through as women, and that's your lot. You know, you can't improve it, you can't get any, you know, you're not supposed to be having sex now, so why are you even asking?
They label it as in your past it, don't they? That's how we as women have felt about it. Again, comes from sort of, you know, the media and everything else.
And the kind of patriarchal way in which society has developed. I can go on about that for a long time as well. but yeah, I think definitely the whole aging process, you know, we are taught that aging as a woman is a negative thing, but men who are aging are not viewed in the same way. You know, they're silver foxes, but oh my God,
with young
her wrinkles.
Yeah.
It's really damaging for our self-esteem. So I think, you know, very much embracing where you are, recognizing the power of yourself as a woman. And like the reason that you're going into the perimenopause stage is because you have had periods, you're able to create life. Like that's a really, really powerful thing. And to kind of own your cycle and the loss of it, is a really nice way to look at it, rather than as a kind of something that you're kind of losing and grieving.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, because I'm going through it, but also you've got to remember it's the end of something, but it's the beginning of something else. You know, it seems like we've got periods interfering with, you know, your everyday sexy life or whatever, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't have to think about that anymore.
Exactly. You know, you don't have to sort of choreograph but trip like holidays or romantic weekends around when you're going to have a period because you don't have one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there are, you know, there are ways to sort of turn things round. But you know what I keep thinking about as well? It's not ironic, what that expression, MILF.
Oh, God, no.
Sorry, it's just coming to me, though. No, you know, about...
We'll say in 1 minute, you're a mum, and then you're not supposed to... you know, and you're not supposed to have sex. And then you got that whole thing about everyone wants to be a MILF.
Yeah, well, everyone...
I bet you hate that, don't you?
I slightly do, yeah. mummy kink is a big thing.
Oh, what's this one?
Oh, well, I mean, it's playing on that whole MILF thing, and basically people getting turned on by the fact that you are a mum. So I suppose that, you know, potentially could be a positive, but also, you know, it just plays into the whole trope about the fact that it's bad. You know, you're not supposed to find a mother sexy, therefore it's a little
it's
a little bit bad.
Yeah.
Exactly,
it's so annoying.
Yeah, it is really, isn't it? But yeah, it is what it is, I suppose. I think, you know, you could lean into that, I suppose, as well. But yeah, it's all the rage, apparently.
Oh, God.
I hear on TikToks.
So. Oh, wow. Well, it can Mummy stay that way away from me.
Yeah,
goodness me.
So I love the title of your book, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, got mojo back. But it's something, again, with this sort of more with the perimenopause and the menopause, is something that... You know, mojo is something you certainly use a lot in your vocabulary, but more, I've lost my mojo.
Yeah.
I wish I could get my mojo back. Yeah. So you're bang on point there with the title of your book anyway. And as sort of with what you've done with the book, what are you trying to, you know, for someone like, for someone like me, who might be menopausal or a new mum, is the book something that that should be on our bedside table?
Oh, well, I'd like to think so, yes. Yeah. So it's very much based, it was kind of inspired by my own experience because I had real problems, you know, with painful sex postnatally. Mm. And it almost, other contributing factors as well, but it was a big part in the way that our relationship took a turn for the worse, you know, after birth. We nearly got divorced. There was a load of other mental health factors playing in there as well, but it's based so that my own experience and my experience with my husband plays into the book, and it's kind of inspired by that. And then I've drawn together lots of different expertise, my own expertise from that journey, but also I've talked to experts like gynecologists, perinatal mental health experts, you know, women's health physios, scar massage experts, all of that. So it's a real guide to navigating this and looking at it from both a physical and mental and also a practical perspective, because also, when do you fit this stuff in? When, you know, even when your kids are a little bit older, you know, you're still ferrying them around to football matches, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You know, and then as you get perhaps a little bit older and into the perimenopausal phase, you know, you might have your parents to then look after as well. You know, that real sandwich generation thing. So the practical side of things, I think, is something that we underestimate as well. You know, we joke about, oh, God, well, I'll never have sex because, you know, or the bottom of my to-do list. It's like, well, no, that's actually a real thing. So learning how to kind of navigate that, I think, is a really big thing as well. So yeah, and it's a really easy read, FYI. And people have told me it's a bit like having a chat with your funny friend. So which I think is really nice, because that was what I was aiming for in terms of reassuring people, you know, helping them through it and helping them to feel empowered and empowered enough to advocate for themselves as well and get the help that they need.
Absolutely. And as women, moms or not, we all deserve to have great sex lives and not be apologetic about it.
Yeah,
you know, we need to be talking about these things, and our orgasms matter and everything, you know, and I know that's another subject, but they do, how we feel about us.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's been so like a man's thing, hasn't it? And women are just like, they've not really felt maybe or been able to sort of talk about their sex life. You know, we've had so many labels to that.
Yeah.
But we have
an absolute right to be able to and to have a wonderful one. Well, you know, but like everything, I guess it takes work.
Well, it's such a big part of our identity as well. We don't, you know, we think of the mind and the body, or we think of mental health and physical health, mm-hmm. but actually your sexual well-being, your sexual health is so important because it kind of underpins both of those things as well.
Yeah. And it's so good for your health.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Both in body and mind, isn't it?
I think of it as like a bit of a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you have good sex, you know, you're going to feel a little bit more kindly towards your other half. You're not going to be quite as annoyed if they do the wrong thing. You know, and then you two are getting on a bit better. And then you'll be nicer to the kids. And then the kids are in a positive mood. And then, you know, and then you might go to work and, you know, you're nice to your colleague. And, you know, it just has a really like subtle positive energy, I think, that kind of flows from it. So,
and it's underestimated, isn't it? I think how important it is when you're in a relationship to have that relationship together.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. I mean, basically, my message is sex can change the world. So.
Love it.
Well, that's just about
a t-shirt.
Perfect.
Yeah. So sex can change the world. So we're all little game changers in this one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's just see what we can do. And if you need to speak to a funny friend, I'm right here for you. Thank you, Cleo. I think we could really talk a lot more on this.
I'm going to make notes
to get back another time.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.